This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, this is Robin.
This is Jackie.
And this is Amanda.
And you are listening to We Saw the Devil, a podcast dedicated to horror, true crime, and all things macabre. If you want to follow us between shows, don't forget to check us out online. You can go to our website at www.wesawthedevil.com. You can follow us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast or on Twitter at We Saw the Devil. And if you want to follow specific co-hosts' social media, you can find the links to those on our website as well. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of We Saw the Devil. This week is Melanie Gibb and Listener Questions Edition.
We had a lot.
It was a lot. And for the record, it is now May 26th, 2020.
At 5:41 p.m.
Yes. So we got an absolute metric ton of questions from you guys, and thank you so much for your enthusiasm and interest in this case. We received some doozies.
We did, and I'm really excited to answer a lot of them. And I'm going to say, since we had so many questions, and some were hilarious, some were really detailed, there was just all types of questions. We picked a lot that were repeated in one way or another, and that we've been seeing, too, in some of the groups repeated. So we tried to get the most asked questions. And then I will say, too, we got a lot of why would Lori do this or why would Melanie say that? And as much as I want to give you my opinion on those, I feel like that would just be my personal opinion rather than the truth of why they chose that. So we did skip over some of those, not because we didn't want to answer them, but more as we don't know what Lori was thinking when she made certain decisions.
Trust me, we want to answer them. We just want to give you something that's just beyond speculation.
Exactly. Exactly. So the ones that we were able to track down a lot of information or even, you know, some information for, we tried to answer. And then because there was such a big response, what we thought is we'd continue doing this. So as we do our Valo updates, if you do have a question that comes up, we will do our best to answer as many as we can. But please send us an email and in the subject line, say Lori questions. And we will try to add them to as many shows as we can when we have the extra time within the show. So our email is wesawthedevil@gmail.com.
You know, we hate to say it, but because of the wide amount of participation in this exercise, I guess, over the last week, we are only going to answer questions that we do receive in email form.
Going forward. We did take some from everywhere for this round.
Exactly. So going forward, hit us up. Via email if you want an answer.
Yes. And then, of course, thank you so much to all of our patrons. We have been enjoying our conversations on our patron-only Facebook group. And then also, we just decided on our next patron-only episode. And for those that do get the postcards, we just ordered some from the particular state that it happened in. So anything else before we start our Valo update of the week?
I guess just don't forget to check us out. You can find us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast, and then every other platform, Facebook, Twitter, our website at We Saw the Devil. Please, guys, if you support the show, please feel free to take a minute out of your day and leave a review on iTunes. You can do that either from your iPhone, or if you don't have an iPhone, you can actually use a computer.
It's pretty easy if you make an Apple account on the computer, and it does help us greatly.
It does. And guys, we're worth it. Beyond that, of course, our Patreon, feel free to check it out. If you want to support the show financially, you can do so. Get merch, shout outs, get a postcard, as Amanda just said, and be part of a really cool private group for us and patrons to interact and discuss cases and updates and other things. You know, we don't actually just talk about Lori Vallow. We talk about other cases going on, and it's a lot of fun. So feel free to check us out on patreon.com/wesawthedevil as well. Before we get into it, I would like to state for the record, because we have not done so as of yet, we are now at 57 days to the end of times.
The alleged end of times.
I don't know. Chad is mighty persuasive. So,
I mean,
potato face. Alrighty. So 57 days. So let's get into it. The biggest news of the week was Nate Eaton's interview with Melanie Gibb. Melanie Gibb finally crawled out of the woodwork and out of her cave and decided to do an interview.
This was one of three. Yes. So there will be two additional coming out in the next couple days. Mm-hmm.
Parts two and three will be airing today. Part two will be airing, and then part three tomorrow on Thursday.
Correct.
So, Amanda, do you want to give your just initial what you thought of Melanie just right off the bat?
So she was a bit different than I thought she would have been. You know, like she came off as like genuine and nice, and also very, you know, reserved in a way and nervous. What would you think?
I thought she was so sweet. She just came off as so naive and gullible and just sweet and soft-spoken. Definitely you could see the fear. And I have to say that she initially claimed that she felt her safety was in danger, right?
Right. Rightly so.
And also, I mean, she's obviously privy to, at this point, the fact that everyone in the world thinks Chad Daybell and Lori are batshit insane. So by coming forward and admitting that she was part of this group, right, and believed some of these teachings, she completely set her ego aside, making herself vulnerable for it. So right. I do greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate that as well. Mm-hmm. And she did seem genuine. She seemed completely sincere to me.
I thought so. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know her. She could be a great actress. Right. This could have been like similar to Meryl Streep. I don't know. But
I didn't get that vibe. I'm wondering if maybe she didn't. My only thing that she might have done is maybe she didn't say the whole truth in certain circumstances just to save what people thought of her a little bit. But I mean, that's just the talk that everyone, you know, on the Facebook groups and things like that are already saying about her. But also imagine being in her shoes right now.
Can you imagine?
I don't think I'd be able to do it how she did it. I don't know. It's definitely a lot.
It is definitely a lot. So big props to Melanie Gibb. And for the record, before people start leaving comments on our YouTube channel or emailing us, I am not putting Melanie Gibb off the hook. I'm not letting her off the hook because she did, in fact, delay by 10 days. You know, when Chad and Lori left, she did delay that. She did not immediately go to police. It is possible that she could have actually saved lives or at least cut this case down by a lot, right? So, therefore, I am not letting her off the hook. I'm just saying that at this point, she seems pretty genuine. So,
right. And then imagine, too, if Lori and Chad were mad at you, you know, possibly for not covering their secret up. Just she feared for possibly her life. Right. So, in that situation, I mean, it's hard to say what you would do, right?
And that's true. I probably would do the same thing. I mean, she had to have known. And I'm assuming over the next 2 days, too, we will learn more about what she understood and was privy to be able to give a fleshier analysis of her. So,
Yeah. So looking forward to the additional interviews.
Alrighty. So let's, in that case, get into it. So Nate immediately comes on and asks if she's been in hiding. And she says, yes, because my friends were involved in something that has to do with kidnapping and people dying, and that she had to think of her safety. She was scared, also scared of the media for good reason. And she says that she's now ready for, quote, those who have passed on. She also said, quote, it's fair to Charles, JJ, Tylee, and Tammy.
Right. And that someone's standing up for what happened to them. And that, you know, she does care for them and the families involved. What I thought was kind of strange is the way that she worded it. And I think I'm hoping it was just, you know, accidental, I guess, the way that she said, for those that have passed on, and then immediately goes Charles, JJ, Tylee, and Tammy, like lumping the kids in that already. I don't know if you got that from her or if it sounded weird to you. Maybe I just overthought
it. I immediately just took it as far as she admitting that she is pretty sure that they moved on, that they passed on. That's how I interpreted it, at least.
Okay. See, yeah, that's what I thought, is she's already lumping them as passed on. And I'm like, well, no, I still want more hope. But I wonder if she knows something else. But hopefully we'll find out in the next couple days.
So Nate Eaton asked her if she knew Chad and Lori better than anyone. And she agreed. And she said, yes, she did. And Nate Eaton asked her if she needed an attorney. And bless her little heart, she said, why do I need an attorney if I'm telling the truth? God is on my side. And I would say, oh, honey, the American justice system does not work in that manner. But okay, first of all, before we continue, right, I would like to state off the bat that I was hard on Nate Eaton an episode or two ago. And I said that I, you know, was partially writing him off because of the redacted transcript and whatnot. I have to say that his demeanor in this interview, the way he asked questions, he blew and knocked this out of the park.
Yeah, he did a really good job.
He did a great job. So, Nate Eaton, props to you, sir.
Right. You'll give him another chance.
I'll get you're back on my good list. You may get a Christmas gift. All right. So Nate immediately starts with, how did you meet Chad? And Melanie says that she met Chad at a conference about his last days dreams and visions.
Right.
She met him in Ogden, Utah at a camp/conference. Melanie went up to Chad and introduced herself to him. So she initiated their meeting.
Right.
And then Nate immediately asks how she obviously met Lori. So Melanie met Lori in October of 2018 when she was teaching a class at church. And then Lori walked up and introduced herself to Melanie Gibb. Melanie said that they shared some life stories, some trials, tribulations, and also their, quote, excitement for the second coming. Melanie said that Lori was very upfront about JJ's autism and how hard he was to deal with at times.
Yeah, I mean, and if you have a special needs kid, too, that's a lot of your life. So I'm just guessing she was just sharing a lot of her life with Melanie. And we're talking about Melanie Gibb. If it's other Melanie, we will specify, because now I know two Melanies in one conversation is a little hard.
Right.
So Melanie had mentioned that Lori met Chad when they went to an event where Chad was speaking. She couldn't remember the exact date, but she said it was like October or November of 2018. And from that point forward, Lori and Chad were talking a lot, also during the conference or, you know, wherever they had gone as well. Nate then had asked if their discussions, like, he was just like, it wasn't anything unusual, right? Like something that you talk about with someone that had similar beliefs at the church, or did they take it a step further? And she's like, no, they took it a step further. They were discussing things that were not something you would talk about at church. It was something that you would talk closely to someone else without other people listening. So I wonder how these initial conversations went. You know, if she's saying that, no, you would probably talk about that in private. Like, what the heck were they talking about?
Right. I can imagine.
Right. And then they both knew that Chad was married with kids. He also mentioned, like, did Tammy ever come to these events? And she said, no, Tammy and the kids were never present at these events.
I wonder why that is.
Can you imagine? I mean, I only have one kid, but trying to take multiple kids anywhere, no.
Yeah, but all of his kids were older. So, like, that wouldn't have been an issue, like, at all for his older kids. And then Tammy, if Tammy was involved, wouldn't she want to go with her husband at some point?
Maybe, but also think of, like, travel expenses, too, because we all know they didn't really have a ton of money.
They were driving, though.
I know, but, like, it's still extra food, extra stuff. Like, it is expensive to go anywhere.
I don't buy it. I think Chad was doing this on purpose and talking to other women.
Right. I think he's a creep. But I'm saying, like, there could be a legitimate reason to it, too. But, yeah, he absolutely is a creep in every way, shape, and form. So then, later on, Chad came down to Arizona. So that was in November for an event. This is what's weird. So everyone, Melanie, Chad, and their friends all stayed at Lori's house. She mentioned that Lori had a big enough house for everyone to stay. Nate then asked, well, where was Charles? And she said he was out of town. The one thing I wish Nate would have asked is, were the kids present during this? And if so, what were the interactions like? You know, did Chad and Tylee interact? Did they not like each other? How did JJ think? Or, you know, what did JJ think about Chad? Just, yeah, I wish that was asked. I wanted to, like, yell.
But to your point, though, you're right, because at what point did Chad have an interaction with Tylee for him to be able to say that she was the dark spirit? I feel like somewhere along the line here, they had to have had some sort of interaction.
Exactly. And I feel like they had to have been there, right? Because if Charles was out of town, where would these kids be here? I mean, Tylee, of course, could have legitimately been at her friend's house since she had a very good friend in Arizona. But I don't see JJ not being there.
Right, exactly. Like, I can't imagine that JJ would have just tagged along to one of Tylee's friends' house, you know?
Houses, right. So I don't know where JJ could have been.
That's a good question. I wish that Nate had inquired a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. Of anything, I wish that he could have placed Chad and the children together in a room at some place.
Yes, yes. And just understanding how that meetup went. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Something else I found really, really interesting, too, is so next, Nate asks Melanie if she had met Charles or if she knew him, and she did. She said the first time she met Charles was at a barbecue, and she said that Charles talked, he was super nice, they conversed about his conversion to Mormonism, and Charles just seemed like an overall super, super sweet, nice guy.
Right.
And Nate said, okay, well, did you ever see Lori and Charles argue or have any, you know, contention in the, see any contention in the relationship? And Melanie said, yes. Lori and Charles argued a lot and that there was a lot of contention in the relationship. She said, but it was more, she indicated that it wasn't full on, you know, screaming matches in front of them. It was just the right. heightened frustration, like tone of frustration.
Right. And then Nate was like, did you ever see him lose his temper or become irate? And she said, no, that sometimes he'd have stress in his voice, just like anyone that's upset would, but he never like full on lost it towards Lori or the kids.
Right. Exactly.
She did mention, too, that there wasn't really a group at the time. It was just like people talking and Chad talking to individuals, and that Chad seemed very private and he would tell Lori things and then she would come and tell the others. It seems just like a weird, I don't know, I'm thinking of like everyone staying in this house, like a really strange sleepover.
Yeah, isn't that really odd? I mean, their house was huge, though.
Right, it was really pretty. But like Lori going into a room and like hearing these secrets and then like coming out and telling the other kids. I don't know. I just get like a weird visual for how all of these interactions are described.
I also wish that Nate had inquired as to if Melanie knew if Lori and Chad had been intimate. Like at what point?
I feel like she was already, she's like, it's just weird sharing people's private things.
Yeah.
So I do think she was kind of holding back a little, not in a malicious, terrible way. I just think that she's uncomfortable talking about what happened.
And that was her friend, too.
Yeah.
So Lori and Chad started spending a lot of time together. And when Chad and Lori met, Chad told Lori that they had been married in multiple previous lives. And they started talking a lot, like nonstop. And when Chad went home, he and Lori were talking and emailing constantly.
I was going to say, all I kept thinking was, what a weird pickup line. Hey, you're pretty. We were married before, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that he had too many. Say what you will about Lori, but she is, you know, fairly pretty. And I have a feeling that not many people of that approached Chad throughout his life. But I found it really odd that Melanie, again, kind of skirts around it. You know, as far as like when they would talk, how they would talk, it was kind of bizarre.
Yeah. And then, well, I mean, she's describing what like a, I don't know, how a relationship does start. You know, you start mm-hmm. talking and then talking more and more and more and consistently and all of that. So Nate then asked something like, did you get a feel that they were falling in love? And, you know, they both were still married. And Melanie says that she offered the idea to get a divorce. She says that they were told they were not allowed to.
Yeah. And then Melanie goes on to explain that Chad got this revelation from the other side of the veil that he was not allowed to get a divorce. Okay. So he's not allowed to get a divorce, but killing your own spouse is A-okay.
Right. And that has not been proven yet. Let's just say that. I mean, I think so, too.
Yeah. But again, so mad sirens and disclaimers going around my recent comment.
Yeah.
But I
just feel like that's almost saying like, yeah, we can't get divorces. We can't put this on paper. We need this still on paper for a reason.
Right.
And is it insurance money? Is it? Yeah, it's going to be easier to just get rid of them. What was the reason?
Mm-hmm. That was like, what? So Melanie then also goes on to say that the cult has the basic gospel of the LDS church with additional doctrine that comes from, quote, the adversary. Now, I have not looked into this, quote, adversary. Any idea? Like, what is that? Did you pick up on any clues that I'm missing here?
No. Again, and it's hard for me to interpret some of this because I am not a member of the LDS church, and I'm just, an outsider looking in and trying to understand some of these terms, and I will say I'm not proficient in a lot of them yet,
yeah,
but I am
same.
Very much trying.
Me too. This is a massive rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So then Melanie starts talking, and she says that preparing a people, right, the groups and the group responsible for a lot of Chad's outings with his books and whatnot, she says that it's not a cult. It's just nice people who hold events, almost like a marketing arm. She says that preparing a people has no idea of anything about Chad, Chad's beliefs, or Lori's and Chad's relationship. Now, the interesting part of this is that I'm also in multiple other Facebook groups, some that have people who do attend Preparing a People and people who live there in Rexburg and are privy to a lot of this. And they state that, yeah, Preparing a People isn't like this giant cult. I see a lot of people in the Lori Vallow Facebook groups calling Preparing a People just a massive cult.
Right.
And apparently it's not. It's more of just kind of a group that comes together and does events for all of these different LDS and end of days authors and writers. But however, comma, it is a conduit for a lot of these people who are in these breakoffs, like right. little cults, to meet, talk, discuss, and, you know, get new members. So Preparing a People is not necessarily a cult, but it is kind of a conduit for a lot of these little breakoff groups to meet.
Right. Every time I hear about Preparing a People, I don't know if you ever caught the like Preppers show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was on I don't remember what network it was, but all I think of is just that show every time we talk about Preparing a People.
Same.
Okay, good. So Melanie also mentioned that there were no like planned meetings or anything, that she was just really spending time with Lori and learning about all of this through Lori for the most part.
Yeah, she made it very, very clear that she was kind of just learning. It was just something I learned. It was just something that I learned and that was taught to me. So what's that saying that sometimes you can be so open-minded that your brains fall out? I feel like this applies to poor Melanie Gibb.
Well, if you think of like everyone within your circle believing something, if you're not the one believing in it, then you're the odd one out. So I wonder if she was like, well, like, I'll listen. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
And then having a group
in the back
people,
of her head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, I don't know about that. And, you know, she still went to church and stuff. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Nate asked how she met Alex, Zalema, and Melanie. So Melanie
Boudreau, now Pulowski.
Yes. Two Melanies. Melanie with an I. Okay. So she met Alex and Melanie at Lori's house and then Zalema at church. And then she did remark that Alex was funny and had the comedian personality, which that's, you know, everyone talks about. And we've seen some of his stand-up. And then they talked about both spiritual and non-spiritual stuff amongst themselves.
And she seemed to have an overall pleasant opinion of all of them. She said that she and Melanie grew very close mm-hmm. and that she absolutely loves Melanie.
Right.
So she also said that Chad and Lori believed that they were leaders and the head of the 144,000. And they believed that they were, in fact, the leaders. Because Nate asked her a question about, were Chad and Lori the leaders of this group? And she's like, right. Well, yeah, they believed that they were the leaders of the 144,000, not necessarily like the leaders of everything.
Right. She kind of started talking about church and how Lori stopped going, and it sounded like she was saying one of the reasons was because Charles was chasing Lori with divorce papers.
That's the first I've heard of that.
Yeah, and I lumped them together. Maybe I misinterpreted, but it sounded like that was one of the reasons. And then, you know, she would attend occasionally, but she overall stopped going. But Melanie did continue to go to church.
And that's what I don't understand, right, is if Lori was starting to have this affair with Chad, and started believing in all of this bullshit. And Charles was like, I've had enough. I'm done. I'm ready to get out of here. I'm filing for divorce. Why wouldn't Lori just sign it?
Because she wasn't allowed to.
Right. That further just makes absolutely no sense. And all comes from Chad. That all comes from Mr. Potato Head himself.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Remember, his veil, it's not on right.
It was a little over to the side that day. So Nate then asked Melanie about Lori using burner phones, which is kind of the first I've heard of that. She said that Lori had three phones and was getting calls on all of them. What is she, like Charlie's Angel? So one special phone was just for her and Chad. And then Chad also had a burner phone just to talk to Lori.
Creepy.
So basically they were having a hardcore affair at this point.
Exactly. And the thing is, too, in some of the groups, they're already talking about the phone thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they brought up the video of when Lori, Tylee, and I believe she brought Melanie with her to the police office to talk about Charles stealing the purse, right?
Right.
And she says, I have an old phone, because he says, oh, is that whose phone is that or something along those lines. And she said it was her mom's old phone and that she had to get a new SIM card. If she had all these phones, though, were they all in the purse? Is that why Charles wanted the purse? Or like, where were all these phones when she's saying she had to use an old phone?
Yeah, I do not understand. I do not know.
And how inconvenient. I barely can keep track of my phone.
I am on it 24/7, but yeah, I don't know. Keeping up with three phones.
Yeah, so weird. So freaking weird. But yeah, so she had three phones, and I don't know which one was her, you know, main phone. Remember her phone that her mom says she talked to JJ, I want to say October 1st, and that same phone that the dog ad had on it. Like, I assume that's her main phone where she talked to Charles and stuff, and then the Chad phone. And I don't know what the third phone was.
Well, I have to say, like, from Melanie Gibbs's perspective, right? Like, is it not a red flag when one of your friends is sitting there with three different phones taking phone calls from different people on each one?
So I wonder how records work for burner phones, too. You know, can they go back for texts and calls and, I don't know, messages and get them like a typical phone if the phone is no longer available? I don't know how that works. Let's say I went and I bought a random phone today. I could put any information in it. It doesn't have to be mine where, you know, you wouldn't be able to tie it to me later, I would think. I would think she'd be smart enough not to do that, at least.
Right.
And then maybe discard it when she knew they were going to Hawaii or whatever. I don't know. That's all up in the air. Maybe it'll come later. It just seemed so weird to have three.
Agreed. Melanie also said that their beliefs had to be secret because if their beliefs got out to church members or teachers, basically, those beliefs would have been considered to be separate from church doctrine, and they may not have actually been allowed in the temple as a whole, which, yeah, because they were real outside.
Right.
Melanie said flat out that Lori and Chad were not in any way following traditional mainstream LDS doctrine. She talked to Lori about it, but Melanie seemed to agree with or listen to the outside teachings.
And I wonder, too, if she is just saying that she didn't really believe it all now, or if she was really into it and then backed away, because she did say she kind of got sucked in.
Yeah,
at the beginning, I believe. I think those were her sucked in, or because he asked, like, were you sucked in or what, were you brainwashed? And she was like, I was brainwashed.
Oh, honey,
it's very strange. But I wonder, you know, she didn't meet Lori terribly long ago, though. Realistically, right? Like before this started. So what made them so close instead of, you know, the next woman in church? Other than they had, you know, some common things, but like you start hanging out with this person, they start getting a little weird. You're like, okay, you're weird, but you're still cool. And then it's just like,
well, let's not forget too that they started doing the podcast together. Like that's Melanie Gibb. Okay, so Melanie Gibb on her own accord, right? And as her own individual person, has written books, has a podcast. She does have a little bit of a name for herself, right? So people know who Melanie Gibb is too. So, you know, I'm sure that Lori kind of got in there and was like, I have two famous friends now.
Maybe. I am going to say, I'm not going to follow any weird teachings you have.
No, for knowing someone that like short of a time and then being like, oh, okay.
Yeah. She does seem though, I don't know how authentic that is, if like she was all in, or she does mention a few times that she was a little more, I don't know, she was more wavering.
Yeah.
If what they were saying was truth or not, but it's hard to tell, I guess. Nate asked something along the lines like if any beliefs cross the line, and Melanie said yes, but we're going to talk about that later. And I think she was talking about the zombie
things. Yeah, that's what my mind immediately went to.
Mm-hmm. I think she said zombie. We'll get into the zombie stuff later or something. And then did they ever make you feel special or chosen? And she said yes, but she said that she didn't, you know, hear it personally from God, or she didn't get the message from God about it. It was just Lori kept saying, you are special. You are.
Yeah.
And like talked her into it.
Mm-hmm. And then Lori also told her that she had been friends with both Lori, you know, her Lori and Chad in a previous life.
Yeah. And she's like, well, that's what Lori told me. And then she laughed and she's like, but I have no memory of that.
Yeah. So it kind of sounds like she wasn't fully bought in.
Right.
There was paperwork. So in this group, all these people would hang out and talk and share. Chad would share his teachings and so forth. So Melanie admitted that there was actual paperwork, and she said that it showed the 12 apostles, the Old Testament apostles, and current friends and famous actors and just different people. She said at one point that it detailed like their previous lives and on a scale and so on and so forth. And apparently Chad had created all of this and explained it out.
Yeah, and I thought she said at one point, she's like, I've skimmed it, but I didn't like detail read it.
Yeah, she said that, you know, it's not for my eyes. So I'm not one of those people that if something's not meant for me, I'm not going to go seek it out and look at it. So
this sounded like a really weird document, though. I feel like I would have been like, what's on this? Like,
I want to read it. I mean, nothing can be weirder than his Dungeons & Dragons character sheet, but hey.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. This might give it a run.
So Melanie did say that the entire group's beliefs was, in fact, planned out by Chad.
Yes.
So that has now been confirmed by Melanie Gibb.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Potato Head is at the top.
Yep. And then Nate also asked her a piece that I found incredibly interesting. Nate asked, can you tell me about Chad and Lori sealing themselves together in the temple? Did Lori tell you about it? This is against church procedure. Basically, couples will get sealed together, and it's kind of to my understanding and speaking with other Mormons, it is like a ritual / thing that they go into the temple to do, and a prayer is said, and that means that they are going to cross over into the next life, afterlife, whatever, together.
Yeah, like that they'll be together always.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So Chad and Lori sealed themselves together while in a temple. So how? They're both married and have their own spouses.
Well, then, yeah. She said something along the lines like they said that it was okay because they were sealed before and that like their spouses would understand later. I don't get it. So yeah, they were sealed by people on the other side of the veil. So I don't understand a lot of this.
I'm taking this to mean that Lori and Chad probably went into temple together, you know, may have sat there, held hands, just sat there close and felt a spiritual connection. And then Chad was like, that's the veil. But I can't imagine because they were already married and people probably would know Chad, right? And Lori, yeah, probably too. So they probably sat there and I'm assuming were spiritually sealed. I mean, that's just my own guess with that.
And I think it's probably a very stupid question. And please forgive me if it's, I don't mean this in a horrible way against any religion or any thoughts or anything. But for being sealed, right? If I understand sealing, like we just talked about, it's like we are sealed together forever, no matter if we die or whatever, right? If Lori and Chad were together in how many lives already, wouldn't they technically already have been sealed together and then that would carry over, or do they have to be sealed in each life?
That's a good question. I do not know.
I don't know. Maybe that's a really stupid question. I don't mean it in a negative way. So please don't interpret it that way if anyone, you know, does. But it just seemed very, very strange to me.
It is very odd.
To do it again, you know, if they had already done it. I don't know.
So Melanie asked Lori about this, and Lori said that it was fine because she and Chad had been married just so many times in, you know, previous lives. And Melanie confirms that Lori herself believes that she has led 21 lives and 5 lives on this earth. Chad says that he was a Holy Ghost, has lived 31 total lives and 5 lives on this earth as well. Mm-hmm. Then my favorite.
Oh, I was just saying, that's a lot of lives.
It is. So now on to my favorite piece. Nate asked Melanie about the portals.
I was so excited to hear this answer.
So Nate asked Melanie about Chad creating a portal in Lori's closet. And Amanda, do you want to tell everyone about the closet portal?
Oh my gosh, yeah. So Nate's face was hilarious. And he was like, it sounds crazy. And then at one point he's like, is it like a box? I'm like, yes, please show me what this portal looks like. She didn't 100% know because she was like, I wasn't there. I don't know. But it's like a spot that Chad said a prayer over. And it's not like he could come through it, like we all kept joking. He could walk through the portal. It was a physical place for Chad and Lori to interact spiritually. So again, they didn't walk through this magic portal. They could just talk spiritually. I want to know where Chad's end of the portal was. Like, where did he have to be to talk to her? Was he also in a closet?
He was on the bowl, Amanda.
He's not there yet.
Oh.
But did like each of them go, oh, it's closet time.
7 o'clock. Like, it's closet time. I don't know. I mean, Chad had Tammy and Lori had Charles. So I don't know.
Right.
How can you explain that? Oh, honey, I'm going to go sit in the closet for a while.
Yeah, like if my husband saw me in the closet just talking to myself, he'd commit me.
Well, Charles did try. I guess
Charles did. Yeah, Charles tried.
Mystery solved. Time to go home.
There we go. Oh my gosh. Like how does anyone, like poor Melanie Gibb, just hearing about portals and still just, imagine if you told me, yeah, I have to go to the portal in my closet to talk to someone, I would think that, I don't know, you were losing your mind. Yeah, I would detain you myself.
Yeah, it's for my own safety.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can't wait for part 2 and 3, because you know this is just going to get weirder and weirder. Melanie also says that Lori had doubt herself. So right. That was interesting. Mm-hmm. She said, if Chad is Satan, he must be a good one.
Oh my gosh, I was like, right? I didn't interpret it like that. I just meant that he got into her head pretty good. God. You know?
No, I didn't interpret. Your mind is in the gutter.
When you say the throw up, I was like, wait, what'd you interpret?
Wow, this is a family show, Amanda.
Oh, is it?
I don't know how I interpreted it. It's just like, if Chad is Satan, he must be a good one. Like, is that not the most oxymoronic statement you've ever heard? If Chad's Satan, he must be great. It's like, okay. Okay.
I don't know. It just that he was a smart one and was able to coax her into all kinds of strange things.
Yeah.
I don't understand. And if you had any weird doubts on that, just like, I don't know.
I mean, she was going all in. This wasn't just some like breakfast club or book club. Like, Chad already had some crazy, crazy ideas. So I'd be backing away slowly, right. But alas.
Well, and a lot of his like followers, and not that I see a ton of them come up on the groups, but even if you go through his books and things like that, I read a lot of the reviews for him the other night, and they're like bought in. And we'll talk about it in some of the listener questions later, but I did get to read one of the books, and I started a second where he talks about his near death, or not even near death, when he jumped off a cliff, but just how his veil got, I don't know, torn. And it's an interesting read, but when you're reading it, it's not like I'm like, oh, this guy knows everything. He fell in the water and he felt his spirit mm-hmm. slightly leave. I just don't understand it. I don't understand how you get bought in with all of this.
Yeah, I don't either. So another piece that was really interesting and relevant is that Melanie knew when Alex and Zulema met and were developing a friendship. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. She said there was no romance, that they were developing just a budding friendship.
Right. And a lot of it maybe just got sped up.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you guys are friends. You know each other. Now you got to get married.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming. But
yeah, that's interesting. Again, that's our speculation.
Yeah, that's interesting to have a third party be present for it, though, to kind of be like, this is when, you know, Alex and Selima knew each other a little bit longer, because, you know, most people have been speculating that they were assigned like a day before their wedding.
Right. And I'm actually a little relieved that they did know each other beforehand.
Really? Why?
Just because it seemed weird, you know. It is weird.
I was like, does it make you feel better that
at least they knew each other a little longer, you know? In my head, I thought it was just like, oh, hey, go back to Arizona and marry this random person.
But does it make you feel like more comforted that Alex like dropped dead and crapped himself on a friend's toilet rather than a stranger's?
Well, I mean, at least they knew each other a little bit longer. You know, it was over a year, at least.
But Zulema's son still had no idea who the hell he was.
Oh, no, no. There's this oldish man or older man. However he said it.
So, again, Melanie just reiterated about how much she loved Melanie. And that she says that we, quote, had a very special relationship. She said that Melanie had a lot of strife going on in her life with her divorce and, you know, Brandon. And that she was really, really worried about her family. And Melanie would talk to her about all of it. And mm-hmm. Melanie Gibb said that they wholeheartedly supported one another.
Right. And Melanie with an I don't think I recall her ever mentioning Gibb.
No.
Do you?
I don't recall anybody having really mentioning Gibb at this point.
Well, I wonder if they had some sort of falling out and what happened or why.
I'm going to go ahead and assume that it's after all of this went down that Melanie Gibb was like, peace, I'm out, instead of coming forward and trying to, you know, kind of get behind everybody.
Right. But like, when's the time frame that happened, you think? Like, was it when they moved to Rexburg? Was it when she wouldn't cover up for them?
I guess we're going to learn in part two, huh?
Let's see. And then Nate kind of, it doesn't end it. It's just they kind of cut it off abruptly. Is it fair to say that you six were close friends or, you know, like a tight-knit family? And she says yes. However, they all didn't really hang out as a group as frequently. It was more just, you know, pieces of the group would hang out. And a lot of the talk was religious talk.
Yep.
So I can't wait for part two and three.
Zombies.
It's like a weird three-part movie that I'm excited for.
I know. I love the trailer for the interview. When this dropped last week, right? I mean, I just, nothing's gotten me hot and bothered. Okay, Eyebrows McGee, Janice came on, Summer came on. Melanie and Ian did their, like, media blitz over the last, like, week and a half, 2 weeks. And I just really didn't care, to be honest. And then when I saw the dun, dun, dun coming next week, Melanie Gibb breaks her, I was like, ooh.
This one's probably the one that I was most excited for. I'm kind of bummed that he did it in three parts because this one was only a half hour. I'm willing to sit for an hour and a half and watch these if they're, you know, each a half hour for sure.
But also for 3 hours, I will watch an hour. Like, I just want, like, a story time with Melanie Gibb. Give it to me.
Yeah. And I mean, Dateline and all of them are an hour with the 1,000 commercials. This would have been great. But I mean, they want to bring people to their networks. So. Yeah. Anyways, that was a very interesting interview. I am thoroughly excited for the next two. There were a couple things. I mean, I won't say news pieces this week, really, but the 25th was JJ's 8th birthday. So there were videos circulating from Kay. And then also we hear from Zach, JJ's cousin, for the first time. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a message from Margaret Trevelyan, I don't know if I'm saying that right, the co-founder and CEO of Life, that's JJ's former school in Gilbert, and that was a really sweet message too. And then in Rexburg on the 25th, they had a candlelight vigil at JJ's old school.
Yeah.
And East Idaho News live streamed it, but they sang happy birthday and then they read a message from Kay. It was very, very sad.
It was incredibly sad.
Just them singing happy birthday. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, this poor child, where is he?
The saddest one that made me cry was when someone made a graphic of Bailey that said happy birthday, JJ. I was like, oh my God.
Bailey. Well, we're very much dog people, so dogs will get to us. But yeah, that was very sad. And then earlier today, and again, today's the 26th, there was a rerun of Dr. Oz talking to Kay and Larry. And when Larry speaks, I want to cry. He says something like, is there a message if JJ could listen to this, or that you want to say to message or say to JJ? And Larry's like, call your pawpaw. I was like,
so sad. Oh my
gosh. And his eyes are welling up. This poor man. I can't handle it anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, it is so incredibly sad.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So that this week, luckily, there hasn't been any court documents. But now we're going to get to some of the questions that were asked of us. Okay, so Robin, Pat from YouTube wants to know, why didn't someone check the GPS tracker on the Toyota they rented for the Yellowstone trip?
So I thought the same thing originally, right? When they were talking about Yellowstone. Easier said than done. So, and that is simply because there wasn't necessarily a tracker on the vehicle. So I went down this rabbit hole, and after a few phone calls and some heavy research, it looks like active GPS trackers on rental vehicles are, against what you would actually believe, rare. So most of the lion's share of big car rental companies do not have any additional technology on board beyond just regular GPS and the dashboard functions, like something that you would find in, say, like an electronic dashboard. And there have been, over the last, say, 15 years or so, like Hertz Rental Car admitted that they install a camera on one out of every 8 of its rental cars.
What?
But they've never actually turned them on.
Oh, okay. I was like, that's so weird. Can you imagine the things they've seen?
Yeah. Yeah, because apparently someone was rented a Hertz rental car and they started to get a little handsy with their passenger. Ooh. And then they looked right into the eye of a camera. And so that actually blew this wide up. And they're like, yeah, we did install cameras, but we never turned them on. They don't have the bandwidth. Now, another case was Acme Rent-A-Car fined one car renter $450 for going above the speed limit. So when they turned in their car, they got an extra $450 bill. And they were like, why? And they got busted for that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'd never be able to rent a car.
Probably the biggest case. Exactly right. And probably the biggest case, a Payless car rental company customer signed a contract and said that they would pay $259 for renting a car. They came back, turned in, time to pay their bill. They were charged $3,400. $3,400.
Why?
There was a GPS tracker on the vehicle. And the original contract was they had so many miles, like unlimited or whatever, within California, and then a dollar per mile. So they charged him 2,874 miles. And because he crossed the state line from California into Nevada and then into Arizona, additional fines because he was forbidden from leaving California.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Read your your agreement.
Yeah. So companies did this more frequently back, say, 10 years ago, 15 years ago when the technology came out. But due to negative press in the media, like that Payless $3,400 bill being the main one, they actually stopped doing it. Also, like Enterprise, Hertz, and other massive car companies, they have the money and the capital, right? So if someone comes in with a fake ID, slams it on the counter, and then takes, say, that $50,000 Tahoe to a chop shop, they're not going to miss it as much, right? Like, they're not going to go out of business because of one car. The small mom and pop shops, however, that vehicle is a cash cow. Like, they need that car. So little companies, FYI, are far more likely to install a GPS tracker.
Okay.
So just because it depends on the car company, and it doesn't necessarily mean there was a tracker, although we don't know if there was.
Right. That's not out yet, if there was one. Interesting, though. I didn't know that about car rentals.
So Shannon W. emailed us and asked, what was the strangest thing about being on location in Rexburg? What research did you do to prepare for the trip? Why did Bonnie and Clyde want to be anonymous?
Ooh, a three-parter. Okay, so I would say the strangest thing was just being somewhere that appeared to be like a cute little place and just knowing that something sinister was happening. You know, just going around to all the places where things happened. That was just an odd feeling. I would say where Lori, Melanie, and Alex lived, like that complex, was probably the creepiest place. Just knowing that, you know, that was the last place JJ was seen, that was kind of heavy.
Yeah.
But also it was very interesting. You know, like it was good for me to physically be there because then I really understood where everyone was. So when I listened to, let's say, Melanie, you know, when she's discussing, I didn't know anything that was happening. That has to be a lie. You were feet, literally feet away from where Lori lived.
Yeah.
You know? And then Alex, even though his apartment number was so, it seemed like it would have been far away, it was literally just the next little cluster of buildings. So it was, you could be at each other's doors within like a minute or less than a minute, I would say.
Yeah.
But Melanie and Lori lived literally next door, feet away. And her just saying that they were doing their own thing and she was out of the loop and it wasn't weird that she never saw the kids is a big lie. I mean, anyone that lives in any sort of place where you have neighbors, you notice little things. I know my neighbor next door is doing work on their house. Not that I really talk to them or anything, but I see the cars come up when, you know, when I go to get the mail or whatever. You would have noticed things. So Melanie, that's another reason why I think she's a liar. But being there helped me to understand how close that was, how close JJ's school was, how far the storage facility was from Chad's house. So we went everywhere. As far as research that I did, I researched places to go and visit. So I looked up as many addresses as I could. My goal was to visit everything at least once just to understand it a bit more. I made sure I was up to date with all the court information, as well as a lot of the theories that I could find. So there's so many theories out there, you know, where the bodies could be if they are dead, to where Chad and Lori would meet up, just weird theories. And I will say the one that I didn't get to explore more was Yellowstone. We did have a trip planned to go to Yellowstone because there are a lot of theories for places on the way up and down from Yellowstone. But a snowstorm came that day and we were afraid of getting trapped. So unfortunately, we didn't get to see that. Now, as far as Bonnie and Clyde, they were super sweet, and I totally understand why they wanted to be anonymous, and it was because they told us a couple things that happened at church. So if you recall that episode about Bonnie and Clyde, they had told me about a meeting or a class where Chad's brother was a Sunday school teacher, and he discussed his brother's actions and choices, and basically he said he loves his brother, but he's very much being misled. And think about it. If they have to come into contact with Chad's brother often at church, you don't want him knowing that they were discussing things that happened in church. So I think that they just did it just to make sure that it didn't impact their day-to-day lives, which totally understandable in my eyes.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this question also came from Shannon from the email. However, it was asked multiple times, so in different fashions. But how much snow is up in Yellowstone now, and when can their search start? So we got a lot of variations about Yellowstone.
So due to coronavirus, Yellowstone closed on March 24th and then just began the first phase of reopening on, what, 6 days ago on May 18th. So no one knows if the FBI had already been inside investigating. Remember, like a couple months ago, people said that the FBI put forth the call if anyone was in the park on September 8th of 2019, the same day that Lori and Tylee and the kids and Alex were there, to share that information with the FBI. Shortly thereafter, people were speculating and talking about how the FBI was, you know, in Yellowstone trying to get inside and look around and whatnot. But the snow was already really, really deeply on the ground. So per the live webcams on Yellowstone's website, which if you want to go take a look there yourself, you can. It's nps.gov/media/yell, Y-E-L-L. There's no snow on the lower elevations at all. The roads are completely clear. The hot springs, geyser areas, all the gates, and like 90% of the park has no snow whatsoever. Mount Washburn and some of the higher elevation does have some snow, especially up there on the peaks. But yeah, 90% of the park is clear of snow currently. So Yellowstone, I did some digging, and Yellowstone outlined a 3-phase plan. So basically all you need to know is that part one of their plan is that they open the south and east entrances of Wyoming, and it limits visitor travel to the lower loop of the park. So currently, and the lower loop allowing visits to the lake, canyon, Norris, Old Faithful, West Thumb, and Grant Village, like really popular places, right? Mm-hmm. So it looks like, right now would be prime time for the FBI to get in there and do, you know, sad to say, digging or, you know, look around. Now would probably be the time to do it before they completely open up for all of the visitors.
Right. And who knows, though, what they've already found, possibly, or what they've already done, or maybe something in the pictures showed them something. You know, we don't know.
Exactly. Let's see. Amanda. So Sharon Hunter asked this on YouTube. She said, Charles said Zach was 19 years old, and who is he and where is he now? Has he spoken to the media, police, etc.?
Okay, so Zach, and it's Zach with a C, is Lori's brother's son, and that's her brother Adam, his son. So that would make him her nephew. I was able to dig on Facebook, too, to try to confirm this, because there's been some people saying it's speculation, you know, that they're how they're related or whose son he is. But I was able to track down Adam's profile. He does not go by Adam on Facebook, by the way. And they refer to his son, Zach, quite a bit. And from the pictures, it looks like the video of what came out for JJ's birthday. So that's my digging there. But I believe he's spoken to police. And the reason why I believe is because his name appears on that court document with Adam, that he may be called. So I'd assume, and that's my assumption, I guess, that he has spoken to someone. I don't have proof of that, though. So just have that in the back of your mind. As far as media goes, I don't know if he's spoken to media, but I know that he did make that birthday video for JJ, and that's been shared by Justin Lum. So that's been out there. I haven't seen him come up in like interviews or anything like that quite yet, but I feel like now that he's made that video, maybe that's coming. Or maybe his lawyer told him not to, because remember, he was there. He lived with them when she started going into her weird stories. Now, I did notice something, too, that he was active on Twitter until recently. So I was able to snag a couple of screenshots. I want to say it was last week that I got these. I'd have to check my phone. But someone did ask Zach about the video that came out of Charles, you know, the police body cam videos that were just released last week. And she said, since the video came out yesterday with Charles speaking, justifies Charles's good nature, like you have said, were you there that night he was locked out? And Zach on Twitter said, I was not. Lori had told me earlier that day that Charles wasn't Charles, and I called her crazy and packed up my stuff and left. I was asleep when he got home, but he spoke to me the next morning as soon as I woke up. I wish I had woken up that night he got back.
Oh.
Yeah. And again, all of these have been deleted. He deleted his, I don't know if he just made his profile super private, or maybe it's completely gone. I'm not a big Twitter user. I'll admit that. But I can't see his profile, and neither can Robin now.
It's true.
So, she also mentioned, like, did you believe Melanie Summer and Janice's stories? So he said, no, they're all crazy and they will never accept the truth and will find a way to blame it on something else. They've always been like that, though. So them coming out and saying that doesn't surprise me. It's infuriating that they would disrespect Charles like that. So I feel like Zach obviously is not on their side. And I have a feeling, you know, again, my speculation, the way that Charles was communicating with Adam, that Adam won't be on their side either.
No, that's what it seems like.
Mm-hmm. So again, I don't know where he is located or anything like that, but I do feel like since he's made that video, I think we will see more of him soon.
I concur.
So this question was asked, actually, I think I counted, what, 3 times in different phrasing. But I'm going to take Steve H. It says, why do you hate Julie Rowe so much?
So if you've listened to the show, you know that every episode, if anything happens to coming out of Julie Rowe, I'm like, what a crazy bitch. And I'm assuming that these questions are directed at me. So
I thought so.
I'm going to go ahead and say it's because she is a charlatan and she is, in fact, a crazy bitch. And she is an opportunist. And what I can't stand is opportunists of the worst kind when they add religion into it. Right. I feel like they prey on the vulnerable. And I feel like Julie Rowe does this. She does this frequently. People who have met with her and had readings by her have written about it, and they'll, you know, go to her for one, whatever particular issue, and she'll talk about her angels. And, well, my angel says you need to come back. My angel says you need to pay $69.99. She's that type of person. Also, some great quotes from Julie gathered throughout the time. Julie said in an interview, in one of her many car interviews, might I add, because apparently I'm not sure if she lives in her car, which is fine. No judgment here around her car or what, but she's always only broadcasting from her vehicle. She said, quote, 3 weeks before Tammy dies, Chad said to me, and he was kind of in his frustrated voice, my plan can't move forward until Tammy's dead. I was disheartened. I was very disturbed by that, because if anyone understands how a person's plan works, people don't get in the way of our plans. Our plans are our plans, especially our spouses, and we are married to them for a reason.
What? Yeah. So, like, if you worried about Tammy, though, like, I would be worried if someone said, my wife needs to die, you know, mm-hmm. or I can't do this until Tammy's dead. You know, I'd be like, he's going to kill his wife. Please go save her.
Yeah, exactly. And then she also said in one of these car interviews, said Julie said she also received a warning from angels about Lori, which she tried to warn him. Julie Rowe said, quote, I told him exactly what my angels told me. And he told me, well, I've been married to her before. And I got a big warning on that. And I looked into the future and I saw some stuff and I was concerned. What? So this is basically a conversation that she's relaying between her and Chad, where she said that her angels came to her and had a warning to Chad about Lori. Uh-huh. And so she told Chad what the angels told her. And he's like, well, I've been married to her before. And she was like, What's so fascinating about Julie Rowe is that her angels only have important shit to say after it already happens. That's
well, that we can. She claims it happened a while ago, though.
Yeah, but isn't it so convenient she didn't get on her podcast or, you know, tweet to the world or say anything? Nothing Julie Rose says is until after the fact. Now, don't forget, like our first episode of doing We Saw the Devil, you know, on the Lori Vallow case, Julie Rose was all about Chad. Remember how she had that note on her website about how she loved Chad? Chad was a professional. Chad was great. He did everything, you know, right for her books and da da da. And no less than a month later, she was like, I didn't know him very well. The gif or whatever with Mariah Carey, I don't even know her. That's literally was Julie Rowe a month later. So I think she's a charlatan. I feel like people who try to make money off of the vulnerable, or let's just say quote open-minded, are terrible people. So that is why I am hard on Julie Rowe.
Makes sense.
All right, Amanda. So next one for you is from Wanda, who emailed us. She asks, was Chad really a grave digger in college?
Yes. So he actually wrote a book about being a grave digger. It's called One Foot in the Grave. And thank you so much, Christy, for sharing it with me, by the way. His official title was Cemetery Sexton. And I will be ashamed to say that I actually found the book a little interesting. Like, I got through it within one evening.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, it wasn't more that it was Chad. It was more just learning the ins and outs of a cemetery. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I will say he talks about the burial process, what everyone's jobs are, talks about some of the myths found in a cemetery and random occurrences. So people ask for bodies to be moved. Weird things that they want to be buried, you know, next to, or who they want to be buried next to, what they want in their casket with them. One point he had to like put someone's shoes on. I don't know. It was very strange. I will say it was very weird at the beginning where he discusses every job and he keys in on the typical gender, the appearance of each person, the qualities each person possesses. It was a little weird there. So mm-hmm. That part I was like, I've never torn apart any of my jobs and went, typically, this type of person is here and I noticed this about them. Like, he keys in on a lot of stuff and it's a little creepy weird. But overall, learning about how a cemetery works, I found that pretty interesting. So yes, he was a grave digger. It seemed like he did it for a while. And he talks about all the people he worked with and what grave digging really entails.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, all right. So this one's from Chris via email, but I think we both should answer this one. So what plot twist has made your jaw hit the ground fastest?
Okay. So for me, I guess the two pieces would be Alex dying of natural causes. I did not expect that in any way. And then also just the overall way the Chandler police handled Charles's death. You know, I realize there's stand your ground. I realize there's all of that self-defense, but just the complete ineptitude and just incompetence that the police department handled that entire situation with, especially since there were already police reports on file, right? Like that was a couple having problems and they did no additional investigation. That's probably it for me. I guess the third piece is the one big document from Chad, like starting to detail.
Right. I couldn't decide. If I had to pick one, it was either the zombie document or the Alex died of natural causes, because I don't buy it.
I don't buy it either. But I think that like when that came out and I saw Justin Lum post the link to the autopsy, like my jaw I literally had to pick it up.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I had to verify. I'm like, let me log into the medical examiner office again. And I'm like, what? No, no. They're wrong. Everyone's wrong.
Okay, so Jess on Facebook, as well as a couple others, this is another really popular question. What happened to the dog? And then another sub question that multiple people asked based off of this is, did Alex kill him too?
Okay, so luckily, no, Alex did not kill Bailey. So let's go back to an interview. So according to Neil Mestis, and he's the dog trainer from Dog Training Elite, he got a call from Lori and she wanted the dog gone. So when Neil asked, wouldn't JJ need a service dog more than ever right now for comfort? Because this was right after Charles's death. And she said it was just too hard to take care of JJ and the dog. So even though Neil didn't agree with this request, it is noted in the media, and there is an article from KTVB7 that you can look up that has this interview with him. But he agreed to pick up Bailey on August 30th. Now, I reached out to Neil this week, and he actually got back to me this morning. So thank you, Neil, if you are listening. But he said that, or sorry, let me go back. So I had asked him, where did Bailey end up? And he said, Bailey was placed with a new family. He is currently working as a service dog for a family's son who also has autism. Both Bailey and the child are doing fantastic as a team, and Bailey is loving his new family.
Yay, happy ending for Bailey.
Yeah, I'm so glad that Bailey, you know, has family and is being treated well.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Yeah, so he couldn't give me, obviously, specifics, but he's pretty confident that Bailey is doing well. So I wonder if he still sees Bailey.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. Happiest moment of the show.
Whew. Right?
Okay. So Christine on Facebook asked, when is Lori's court hearing? I know it was delayed because of COVID. If the kids are alive and well, why would someone sit in prison? All she has to do is tell anyone where the kids are and she will likely get out. Also, I don't buy into the fact that she can't tell anyone where the kids are because the jail conversations are being recorded. She had months before being arrested to tell them. It makes zero sense.
Agreed. So if you look on the iCourt portal, and that houses all of the Idaho court's information, if you do want to check it out, it's mycourts.idaho.gov. You can type in Lori's information and see her hearing information. So her preliminary hearing is scheduled for July 9th and 10th at 9 a.m. And it's kind of a handy tool because it shows the entire, like, all of the court information and, like, what's been presented. So if you ever want to log on, it's a pretty nifty tool. As far as sitting in jail part, remember, her family is sticking to the story that she's doing all of this to keep them safe from something. We don't know what that something is that's so dangerous and, you know, she needs to keep them from them. Now, here's my thing, though. So if she said where the kids were, let's say that tomorrow she just says where the kids are. I don't believe she'd just get out because she did miss that deadline. Remember when they were saying that the kids had to appear at the Rexburg Police Department or the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare back in Rexburg? I want to say that was in January. So I don't think she just gets to get out of that because she did not follow court orders or, you know, the order to produce the children.
Right.
So something still will happen to her either way. To my knowledge, I am no, you know, lawyer or anything. So I think she's still in trouble either way. Now, to the last statement, yes, I agree. They had tons of time to talk to her. However, even though they're saying that they have no clue where the kids are, they could technically be lying still. They don't have any reason to tell us.
Right,
so exactly. Any of her family members. So that's just speculation, though. I don't know if they know or not.
We have one from a patron. So this one is from Shauna S. She messaged us on Facebook and she is also a patron. So hello, thank you, patron. She said, I would like more info on the first two husbands, Lori's husbands, William LaGoya and Nelson Yanes.
Okay, so I went on a deep dive trying to look for information on these two. Now, there's not a lot of information that I can find, unfortunately, but I really, really tried. So Nelson Yanes attended the same high school as Lori. Now, I did make a classmates.com profile so I could look at the yearbook pictures, and I was able to find one in 1988. So that exists. Again, it's just the high school yearbook photo, though, so not much. But according to Inside Edition, they married in 1992, but it was very, very short. There was also an interview within the document from, like, a friend from Cheer. Remember, she was a cheerleader before. And she said, I know the boy was not Mormon, so that might have been the cause for the breakup. So to my knowledge, though, no one online can find a marriage certificate. I've looked in all the groups that I could, you know, find about Lori Vallow and Reddit and things like that. No one has been able to find marriage certificates, even when they've tried to, like, pay for it. And then there is a rumor going around that it could have been annulled. So that might be why there's no documents. Again, I can't confirm that rumor, but I've seen it a couple different places. But yeah, so if it was very short-lived, it could have been annulled, and that might be why no one's finding much on it. Now, William LaGoya, they married October 22nd of 1995 in Texas. She was 22 and he was 23 at the time. They had one son, and that is Colby, in 1996. William filed for divorce on December 17th, 1996, and they were officially divorced February 25th of 1998. And so there's some things on Wikipedia on that, and then there is like a timeline the postregister.com put up with some of the information, but again, it's very hard to find. There is some talk that people have been able to do like background checks or, you know, something on William, and that he is alive and well, and that's all that they've noted. So these two, I believe, are alive, and I could see, you know, the short-lived one not really finding much on it, because it seems like it was right after high school, and what, she was only 22 when she married William.
Yeah.
So not a lot. And nor do I think that any of these two play a role in anything that's happening now, luckily for their sake. All right, I have a fun question. And this one is very silly, but it was kind of fun to answer it. So Amelia asked, who should play Lori, Chad, Alex, Charles, Tammy, and Zulema in a movie?
Amelia says for Tammy, she would pick Sandra Bullock. For Lori, she would pick Laura Prepon. For Charles, she would pick Michael Chiklis. For Alex, she would pick Chris O'Dowd. And for Chad, she would pick Matt Damon. She says he, too, looks like a potato when he gets fat. And then Zulema getting a massive upgrade.
Right?
Amelia would pick, is it Mila Kunis?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. She's way too pretty for that. Well, I had fun answering this one. And I will say I am very bad at this because I'm not good at knowing actors and actresses' names. Mm-hmm. I always have to look it up and I can't remember anyone. Everyone looks the same. I don't know. I'm bad at it. So I phoned a friend for one of them. I'll admit it. So Tammy, Joan Cusack, because I feel like her like face.
Cheekbones.
A little bit similar. Yeah. Now, Lori. I Googled actresses with soup hair because Lori has soup hair. And then I found a picture of Brittany Snow that I felt like looked like it, you know, like the hairstyle. And then later on, Sherry Moon Zombie, for sure. And she has the annoying voice like Lori. Charles, I said Ty Olson. Alex, Enrico, I don't know if I could say his name right, but again, Google was my friend for this. Colin Tony, sorry, Enrico. Chad, Kevin James. And back when he was like bigger and like bulkier, I would say. And then Zulema, Rachel Ray.
Not sure how I feel about your Zulema pick either.
Well, it's hard, okay?
It is. No, this was so hard. I had so much fun doing it, but it was so hard for some reason. I feel like we've become so familiar with all of the people that like no actors could properly do it. Okay.
Yeah.
So for my picks, I concur, Amelia. I too picked Sandra Bullock for Tammy, like American, you know, America's sweetheart, Sandra Bullock. For Lori, 100% absolutely Sherry Moon Zombie. We have the soup hair, we have the bat shittery, and like in all of her roles, right? Sherry Moon Zombie is a very sweet, kind vegan. So like,
real life. But she has that soft spoken, like her voice in certain roles, I feel like matches.
Oh, yeah. I heard Sherry Moon Zombie in the video at the police station when Lori, Tylee, and Melanie were there. She actually sounds like Sherry Moon Zombie when she's talking multiple times.
Oh my gosh, but that role, that one, baby. No, baby. Can't do it
baby
again.
Baby Firefly.
Can't do it again.
Yeah.
Nope.
For Charles, I picked Ben Kingsley.
Okay.
For Alex, I picked like Bruce Willis, like if he lost just a little bit of weight.
Maybe
like a younger Bruce Willis. Yeah. Alex was the hardest for me out of all of them.
Same.
For Chad, I picked James Corden. And then for Zulema, I picked Ninel Conde. And she's a Mexican television host, singer, and actress. And she's been on a lot of telenovelas. And I think.
And you make fun of mine. You had to go to telenovelas.
I looked up Zulema, and she actually. Like, I just Googled Zulema, and this woman comes up in the images.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess in that, like, one of them that comes up, but, like, her normal face, I don't know.
I can't.
I think that was a stretch. Zulema's, like, hard. That was the hardest. Well, Alex and her were the hardest ones.
Alex and Zulema were definitely the hardest.
Mm-hmm. What a strange couple.
Right? They weren't even a couple. They were a pairing.
Have you heard her podcast interviews? Her voice does not match her face.
I need to listen to this now.
That's something that we'll talk about later, but yeah.
I did initially, right when Zulema came on the scene as a new, you know, cast member, I just don't recall, so I'll have to double down.
Her voice, it doesn't match her face. Well, and with that was a lot of questions that we answered, and we have more, and we'll sprinkle them in throughout. And again, if you want to submit more questions, please email us at wesawthedevil@gmail.com. And when we do have some extra time on episodes, we will try to sprinkle in as many as we can.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And again, if you're looking to support the show and just want to talk about Lori Vallow just at any time, feel free to hit us up on Patreon. We have tiers for as low as $3 a month, and it will get you access to our private Facebook group where we discuss this case way more in depth. So again, that's patreon.com/wesawthedevil. And as Amanda said, we look forward of trudging through a lot more of this in future episodes.
So, thank you for submitting the question.
Yes, thank you. And with that, so we did put out the last episode of our East Area Rapist Joseph James DeAngelo series. We now have three of those out. If you are interested in a serial killer, one of America's worst just criminals overall, Joseph James DeAngelo, we will be coming out. We've been kind of doing a profile on him, right? So we started out, episode one was his family and life. Episode two was his ransacking and burglaries. And then episode three was the Visalia ransacker. And the next episode is going to be the big one I think most people are waiting for, the East Area Rapist series. So that is coming at a time to be determined, because it seems that a lot of stuff is going forward in the Lori Vallow case. So look for that in the future. But that's it for tonight, guys. So until next crime.